I see? I don't even remember. The last time we were here was before our rally, which was in March.
Has it been that long? Really?
Mm-hmm. No, the last one we did remotely.
That's right.
Because of the weather.
But weren't we here with Sean sometime recently? Or was that like early?
That was before the legislative
Good
session.
Grief.
Time flies.
Oh my gosh.
So we're glad to be back. We had been, you know, trying to put out an episode every other week, and then we just had so much going on. So I did put out the last episode in the feed is the full audio of the rally. Mm-hmm. So if anybody missed it, they could go back and listen to it. It's pretty fun. You hear the crowd. It's very motivating to listen to.
We had such great speakers. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, every time I listen to Sherry Cotney, she gets me fired up. Mm-hmm. And our storyteller did such a great job. I just really, I can't express how grateful I am to people who are willing to share their own personal lives in that way for the good of others who they don't want to have to experience the same things. Mm. That is so selfless and also so empowering, I think. And I'm just really grateful for the very cool people that we have met along this journey mm-hmm. who are in that position.
Yeah. Well, we, like I said, it's in the feed, so you can go listen to the whole thing. And there are clips on our social media. If you go back to March, you can, if you want to watch it in clip form, you can find it there. But we are glad to be back today with a new episode. We're going to try a slightly different format today as we try to get all of the information out to you that we want to get out to you. So each of us is going to, we've each come with three things we want you to know. And then each of us has also come with one thing we want you to do after you listen to this. So, April, do we want to start with you? What are the three things you want us to know?
Sure. So the three things that I want you to know are all pretty focused on the federal threat to Medicaid. Hmm. So the first thing is that right now we are in the process of a reconciliation bill creation. And Congress is working right now to cut as much as $880 billion from Medicaid over the next 10 years as part of that reconciliation process. They're on a break right now through the beginning of May, and then committees will who oversee various budgets, including Medicaid, will meet and determine how the Medicaid budget will be cut more specifically. So they're going to be talking about like exactly what those cuts will look like, and then that will be put into the reconciliation bill at some point.
That $880 billion, can you explain how we know that that will likely come from Medicaid?
Yeah, so I think it's one of those things that as outsiders and people who don't spend a lot of time in Washington working on federal advocacy, this wasn't clear at the beginning. But the way the process works is there is, you know, the overall like finance committee that's looking at budgets on the House side, but then they also have other committees that will do the more detailed work mm-hmm. for specific areas. And so, for instance, on the Senate side, it's the Energy and Commerce Committee that has Medicaid in its purview. On the House side, it's divided between a couple of committees. The HELP Committee is the primary one. And so we know that they're looking at $880 billion for Medicaid because the committees that are looking at this have been tasked with cutting that much money from budgets. And we know that they're not going to be doing it, or at least we've been told they're not going to be doing it from the Medicare budget. Mm-hmm. So the only other budget that has that much money in it that could be cut is Medicaid. So it's really kind of a deductive reasoning process, mm-hmm. but that is what we are looking at, somewhere in that range. And You know, we kind of see on the Senate side, there is maybe less clarity about how much they want to cut. We know there's a minimum, a floor of about $4 billion for Medicaid, but we don't know how high they're going to be willing to go. The way they enacted the budget resolution for this as part of this process was pretty non-traditional in that they didn't come up with a unified agreement between the House and Senate about the numbers. Usually that's what we would expect in a reconciliation budget resolution, but this time the Senate has kind of stuck with what the Senate said originally, and they're a little bit more vague about what their cuts are going to be, and then the House side is sticking to their original targets, which for Medicaid was about $880 billion over 10 years, and I think that overall it's about $1.5 trillion.
That says to me that maybe there is still some division and non-agreement amongst the members of Congress if they couldn't come to an agreement on the amount, right?
Yeah, well, I think that it's really difficult. I think that there are leadership both on the House and Senate side federally are trying to thread the needle. They're trying to keep their very conservative Freedom Caucus members happy with, the high level of cuts that they're looking for. They're trying to keep other members who have concerns about, hospitals and constituents and the amount that their states are going to have to then pay if the federal government cuts. They're trying to keep them on board as well. And I would not want to be in that position, quite honestly. But I think the bottom line is they're not in agreement yet. And even when they passed these resolutions, it was pretty tough and they still were not fully they still didn't fully identify the mm-hmm. numbers that they are targeting. So there's a lot of work left to be done in the upcoming month.
Mm-hmm.
So the second thing that I wanted everyone to know is that not all of these proposals that we'll be hearing about coming out of the committee are the same, but they all cut money from Medicaid and they all would have the impact of terminating people's coverage all over the country and in the state of Kansas. So some of the proposed cuts are really obvious and you can tell that it's going to terminate coverage for people. So some of those would be things like reductions in the federal match, how much the federal government pays for Medicaid as opposed to how much the states are needing to pay. There are things like block grants that just set one set amount for each state. And then the state has to figure out how to make that work based on the demand that they have. And so if there are any cuts that need to be made, that needs to be done at the state level. Per capita caps, that's kind of the same concept. Basically, each person in Medicaid would be limited to a certain amount of spending. And if they went over that, then they would not have it covered. So those are what I call the really clear and obvious ways that people are going to lose their coverage or have their coverage terminated.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some backdoor ways to make this happen that might not be as obvious. And those are probably getting more airtime in Washington than the ones that are more obvious. So these are things like work reporting requirements or limiting provider fees that are allowed within Medicaid. With work reporting requirements, the problem is never with the work. Mm-hmm. The problem is always with the reporting. And because it's such a burden for people to put in all of the paperwork showing how many hours they worked, there are also people who are in this income range that qualify for Medicaid who don't have a lot of control over the hours that they work. Mm-hmm. And so if their employer, cuts them early one day, will they fall under the required amount that they need for that month? If so, then they lose, not only do they lose the money that they would make, but they also lose their health coverage. So there are a lot of things with work reporting requirements that are just barriers to having people participate. And in practice, that has been very successful in getting people out of this coverage. So we know in Arkansas, there was a work reporting requirement in place for, I don't know, about 6 months a few years back. And there were like 18,000 people in the course of that 6 month period who had their coverage terminated. And in many, many cases, it was not because they weren't working, it's because they were having trouble getting all of their paperwork in on a monthly basis to document that work. Mm-hmm. So we would anticipate that if that is put in place, there are going to be thousands and thousands of fewer people in Kansas and even more in other states with higher populations that would have their coverage terminated because they would not be able to keep up with that burden.
It's like Groundhog Day. Is it 2017 all over again?
Yeah.
You're going to do the same thing?
Right. Well, and I just think it's really important for us to know that any way that you pull money out of the system, there's going to be an impact on the people who are receiving that money now. So let's not be misled by the idea that, oh, we're not really going to hurt anybody. This is just going to be looking at waste, fraud, and abuse. This is absolutely going to take coverage away from people, and there's no way that that is going to be limited to waste, fraud, and abuse, especially when we're talking about a number that high. So we all just need to be transparent. What we're talking about is cutting Medicaid. How we do it, that doesn't change the fact that we're cutting Medicaid.
I just gotta say that I saw a clip, I think it was last week, of Speaker Mike Johnson saying to reporters, there is $51 billion of waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicaid. And what I thought when I heard that was, but you want to cut $880 billion. If there's 51, that's still, I'm terrible at math, like $829 billion on top of the waste, fraud, and abuse? Like,
yeah. So even out of their own mouths,
yes,
they're saying that. And I think when you look at the things that they're including in that waste, fraud, and abuse number that they use, primarily that is provider action and not the end recipient of the services that is engaging in that waste, fraud, and abuse. So so many.
We could go on and on and on about waste, fraud, and abuse.
Yes. And I think the bottom line is that is not what this does.
Yeah.
What this does is terminate healthcare for people who are currently receiving it through Medicaid. So we just all need to be really clear about what we're talking about.
They're so sneaky with the words, because work reporting requirements sounds good. Limiting provider taxes, is that what you talk, like that, if I hadn't looked into it, I'd be like, well, okay, that's a good thing, right? And no, it's not.
No.
You don't need to know the details.
It's still
you just
a limit.
Need to know that even medical providers are like, no, don't do this.
Absolutely. Oh, they absolutely are.
Yeah.
Because the way that the system works is when they have those provider fees, it helps them draw down more federal dollars in match. So overall, it's a benefit to the consumers and the providers. And no, it absolutely would not benefit them.
So if the providers don't want the provider taxes limited, we shouldn't either, is what I take from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sneaky.
April, can I ask a question on work reporting requirements? This might be a little bit we might just not know what could happen, because we really don't know what could happen with these cuts. But if the federal government does pass work reporting requirements within the Medicaid program, do you think that those requirements would be standardized across all states, or do you think different states could have different ideas on how to do those work reporting requirements?
You know, I think it's a really good question, and we don't know the answer yet. Some of that is going to be determined in the committees as they're coming up with this proposal, and then some of it, I think, will be part of the rule and reg process at the federal level. So I think that you're pointing out something that is, you know, another source of anxiety, I think, for advocates like us. We don't know what any of this is going to look like, if Kansas is going to have any control, if we're going to be forced to use a federal system, if it's going to be one size fits all. None of that is clear at this point in time. Okay, so are you ready for the third thing?
Yes.
Okay, so let me just start with saying they are using the reconciliation process in order to pass these cuts. And the reason they're doing that is because it's a maneuver that helps them sidestep the requirement on the Senate side that they have 60 votes in order to pass legislation. So with reconciliation, they just need a straight majority of votes. And that is probably the best that they're going to be getting on something like this that has so many cuts. They would not be able to pass this if it had to go through the regular process. So this reconciliation process is pretty detailed, and they've already done the first part, which is identifying, well, we talked about how those are kind of fuzzy numbers, but they identified the amount that they wanted to cut. That was placed into the budget resolution that was passed on both the House and Senate side. So the next step is the House needs to identify their position in terms of what those cuts will be. And they want to get that done before the Memorial Day break. So really, that would be pretty intense work during the month of May to get the committee work done, and then also have that report out to the full House and get it through the process before Memorial Day when they take a break. Then, if that is possible, it will switch over to the Senate side, and they will do their work. And we're still hearing that they want to have the entire reconciliation process done by the end of July. So I don't know. You know, sometimes these things seem like they're overly ambitious, but where there is political pressure and where the president wants this to happen, you know, that can be very persuasive. So I think that we just need to buckle up and be ready for this to happen quickly.
Mm-hmm. We do have a bit of good news in that Senator Moran has spoken out on the floor of the Senate against Medicaid cuts. So only time will tell, but he has expressed publicly that he doesn't like the Medicaid cuts. So, and I know he's going to be pretty key in getting the vote that they need to pass this. So
he's not the only Republican who has said, who has come out in opposition or said something along those lines too. So I think,
and I'm not saying this about Senator Moran at all, but some of the people who have spoken out against Medicaid cuts have absolutely been playing this game of semantics. So they don't want to see cuts, but they're fine with work requirements. And we know those are cuts, but they are acting as if they won't be cuts. So I think that, you know, we have to listen really carefully to exactly what they're saying to get a good sense of where they will be on this issue.
That's a good point. I'm glad you said that. I'm going to go back and watch everything with a critical ear again. is that what you got then, April?
Yeah, so those were my three things. They were all about the federal potential cuts. And I really think it's important for all of us to have this in our minds and really be watching for it.
Marissa, you want to go next?
Yes, I do. So I brought my three things that are at the state level. So I got to spend a lot more time in the state house during this session, which was actually really exciting. I thought I wasn't going to like it, but I did.
Oh, good.
So I want to start off with the win for us, which is exciting. So this is about continuous eligibility for low-income parents and caregivers here in Kansas. Under current provision, low-income parents and caregivers on Medicaid have continuous eligibility for 12 months. So they apply for Medicaid and they are able to access that health insurance through Medicaid for 12 months and then they reapply the following year. This provision has been in place since 2010. And then this year, the legislature sought to make an end to that provision and to make it more difficult for low-income parents and caregivers to access Medicaid. It was a provision that was added to the budget for 2026, and it was vetoed by Governor Kelly in the budget. He used a line item veto. The legislature did seek to override the governor's veto, and the Senate did end up voting to override for the veto, I believe on party lines. But what was exciting was that the House did not take up this line item veto, and so low-income parents still do have access to that 12-month continuous coverage in Kansas on Medicaid, which is really, really exciting.
Whoa. Yes, I'm really thankful to the House for leaving that out. And I think in part, that is in acknowledgement that it's really expensive to have more frequent checks for eligibility. So if you're asking the families to submit everything every month, potentially, then that means someone's got to actually look at those. And the contractors that are doing that for the state right now, it was estimated that it would cost like $3 million or more a year just to process those additional eligibility submissions. So
the less administrative burden, the better.
Yeah.
So I do have to bring us down a little bit with my next two pieces, and I am sorry for that. The next legislation I want to talk about was House Bill 2240. This allows the legislature and the Legislative Coordinating Council, or the LCC, to have more oversight of any potential changes to the Medicaid program. And this was a bill that I got to actually testify in opposition to. It was my very first time testifying. I was very, very scared, but I did it, and I would like to do it again sometime. So basically what House Bill 2240 does says that any waiver or change that could increase costs to the state must go through the legislature or the LCC before the agency can actually move forward with implementation. So this is another way to add more administrative hurdles for agencies to implement changes that could potentially be mandated by the federal government. Mm-hmm. Some of these changes that have to be done to the Medicaid program are not asks, they are mandated by CMS. So the state has to do those things, otherwise our federal match could be in jeopardy. So basically what we're concerned about is that this legislation could potentially create a backlog for the legislature or the LCC because some changes are those mandates and have to be implemented. And sometimes they don't have a really long runway to be implemented. So we're concerned about, you know, what this is going to look like for a Medicaid program in the next few months.
Is there like a minimum amount in that, or is it any cost increase?
It's any cost increase.
So it could be like $50.
It could be like 50 cents.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The way that it's written.
Wow. And I mean, our legislature is only work like this year. They were only there January to April. Yeah. So what do we do in September?
Well, that's the LCC.
That's where they come in.
Yeah, that's where they come in. But, you know, that's still going to be a lot of time out of their schedules. Mm-hmm. And the LCC is comprised of the legislative leadership. They have a lot on their plate as well, besides just going through each of these, you know, complicated changes that CMS is requiring.
And that did pass and became law.
It did pass, yes.
It was vetoed, but they were successful in overriding the veto.
So basically, it's going to create more administrative burden for the agencies, but also for the legislature as well. And so that's a concern for what it's going to look like for our Medicaid program going forward. And finally, I want to talk about House Bill 29. This is a public health bill that went through the legislature, and it requires the Secretary of Health and Environment to swear under oath that there is probable cause to take action to prevent infectious disease from spreading. So basically, there's another hurdle for public health officials to prevent public gatherings in order to make sure that infectious disease is not spreading here in Kansas. The legislation also allows anyone who disagrees with the secretary's or other health officers' actions in this to file civil action. And local health officials can now only recommend, not prohibit, those public gatherings. And local health officials and the secretary can't use law enforcement to enforce any order present. Our concern here is that infectious disease could have a higher chance of spreading here in Kansas, because there is more, there are fewer tools to prevent it within our local health officials' toolbox. So,
yeah, I mean, we have tuberculosis and measles in Kansas.
Right.
This is crazy.
I know. It is. I mean, it's a little surreal, and it's not funny at all,
but it
is just so bizarre, because these are things that, you know, as I was growing up, it was relatively unheard of to hear about someone having some of these things. So then it makes you wonder, like, what's next? Are we going to be dealing with polio again? Is it going to be, I mean, it's just scary. Not just this provision, but this idea that public health is somehow adversarial,
yeah,
as opposed to being for the greater good of the community and all of our health.
I mean, I could probably talk for days about this, having worked at the Department of Health during COVID when it was going on. And I think people are quick to forget how scared the public was when that started. When you've got an unknown illness or disease that pops up, and maybe it looks like a cold or it looks like the flu, but then you find out it's not behaving exactly like those things. As somebody who was answering the hotline and answering, you know, the general COVID question inbox all day, every day, people have forgotten what that was like. Some people might worry about those orders and being told what to do, but ultimately, when you don't have any information, you have to look to those experts, and those county health officers are your experts. They know your county better and your community better than anybody. And so that's just really disappointing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. With House Bill 29 and House Bill 2240, we'll have to see what happens in the coming months. But I do think both pieces of legislation could be a very big slippery slope for Kansas.
Congratulations on the end of the state legislative session, too.
Absolutely.
You put in a lot of work. So,
if you got to see Marissa testify,
yeah,
that one time, she did a fantastic job. So
thank you.
Next year, we're expecting her to be testifying even more, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's scary. I've only done it the once, and I was like shaking.
Yes, so. I was nervous.
Good job.
It's good.
Okay, so the three things that I brought for this episode are, I don't know, because of what I do, I read the news a lot, so that's where I got mine from. which is not a good thing sometimes, to read the news all
yes,
the time.
Yes, the news is
don't do
very
it.
Disturbing.
I don't recommend. So the first one is, we talk a lot about Medicaid, rightfully so. I do think there's things that people who get their health insurance through the marketplace should know that are upcoming. And that is, there's two different pieces to this. The first one is the cut in funding for navigators and assisters. If you're not sure what a navigator or an assister is, they are free, unbiased resources. They're people who live in Kansas that can help their fellow Kansans kind of navigate and figure out the health insurance system. And that includes not just marketplace coverage, but they also know about Medicaid and Medicare. And so these are very helpful, smart people who their job is to help others navigate this complex system. And unfortunately, the funding for them was slashed 90% recently.
90?
It was slashed to a lesser extent back in 2017. When the previous Trump administration made similar cuts, but then was restored again in 2021 under the Biden administration. So if you are somebody who uses those resources, you should just know that there's a pretty good chance that those resources will go away. They will certainly be reduced but they may also go away altogether. And I just wanted to mention this because we have some really good partners that we work with who do this, including Thrive, Allen County, and El Centro. El Centro provides the service also in Spanish, which is a valuable resource that you can't find everywhere.
And also the Community Care Network of Kansas.
Yeah, Cover Kansas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they help people all over the state. So this is going to affect everybody in the state. These navigators also help people not just with navigating health insurance, but also other resources in the community, including food assistance, utility assistance, and housing assistance. So this is going to have a big impact on ways that people can get those community resources, not just health insurance. You should also be aware that there is a proposed rule from the Trump administration, from CMS right now, that would shorten the open enrollment period for the marketplace. So previously, like this past year, open enrollment was November 1st through January 15th. So if you were ahead of marketplace plan, that's when you could switch and do whatever you wanted during that time. If it was outside of that time, you had to have what we call a qualifying event. And so if you just wanted to make a change, you had to do it in that window. And the proposed rule would shorten it now from November 1st to December 15th, taking a full month off of that open enrollment period. They did do this also during the previous Trump administration, so it's likely to happen.
And I mean, that does have an impact on mm-hmm. how many people enroll and how many people know about the program. I think that it is not without consequences when those types of changes are made.
Yeah. The other part, if you get health insurance through the health insurance marketplace, you should know about, and we've talked about this before, is the sunsetting of enhanced marketplace subsidies. So if you get coverage through the marketplace, you may qualify for tax credits and financial help paying for that coverage. Since 2021, because of COVID, many people who get their health insurance through the marketplace have been eligible for enhanced tax credits. So they're actually getting more financial help to make that coverage more affordable. In fact, nearly all Kansas enrollees in the marketplace get these enhanced subsidies, 93% in 2024. These enhanced subsidies are set to expire at the end of 2025 unless Congress takes action to extend them, and that does not seem likely. So this means that at the end of 2025 and the next year, basically all Kansans who get health insurance through the marketplace will see an increase in the cost of those plans.
And it's going to be a pretty steep increase. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, a lot of the bandwidth for advocacy in access to health care has been around Medicaid, but we definitely need to be talking about this with mm-hmm. our federal delegation, because this is huge and it will have a really big impact on, most likely, on the rate of uninsured people in Kansas. Yeah. And that in turn has an impact on, you know, uncompensated care for hospitals and other providers. It's not a good domino game for us to be starting right now.
No, and 93% of Kansans being affected is like, whew, I checked that number twice just to make sure I got it right. The second thing I wanted to talk about is, some of you may be aware that this legislative session, the Kansas legislature created a committee called COGE, which is like DOGE at the federal level. They created a portal with the purpose to collect suggestions from Kansans on the ways the state can save money and be more efficient. And the Kansas Reflector actually got copies of all of those suggestions. And so that's where I'm getting this from. Wrote a really interesting article. They received more than 1,500 submissions from the beginning of February until about the end of March, so about a two-month period. Roughly 180 of those submissions mentioned Medicaid expansion.
Wow.
Ooh. And the vast majority of those supported Medicaid expansion.
Nice.
We are not surprised by that, knowing that most people support it. The story mentioned one specific story that I just thought was really illustrative of the people that we see all the time. And that was a single mother who said that she was very frustrated and defeated that she is caught in the coverage gap. So she does not Her employer does not offer her health insurance. She earns, she said, about $1,200 per month. And in Kansas, in order for her to qualify for Medicaid, her income would have to be no more than $880 per month. Most of that paycheck goes to rent, bills, other necessities. Trying to live as a family of four on a paycheck of $1,200, you can imagine, is very difficult. And there's just none left for her to, like, go to the marketplace. She would have to pay full price, and she simply can't. She said, quote, "I know I'm not the only person with this problem, and it leaves the question of what am I supposed to do?" And she said she is suffering through illnesses or medical conditions, unable to afford the help she needs. You can go find this article pretty easily. Other topics covered in the suggestions included abortion, health autonomy, school funding, school choice, tax relief, and criticism about frivolous lawsuits taken on by the Attorney General's office.
There have been quite a few lawsuits.
The general topic of health was by far the most common thing. The third thing that I just wanted to mention, I am such like a polling percentage. For somebody that doesn't like math very much, I sure love stats. I don't know. But I just thought this was, once again, confirmation of what we already know. So the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, had polling published at the beginning of April about the overwhelming opposition to the federal government cutting Medicaid funding. So in general, people have a very favorable view of Medicaid. They see it as an essential program to provide health care to vulnerable populations. Most of the people that were polled are not satisfied with the state of mental health care in the United States. Also something I don't think any of us are surprised about. But they do agree that Medicaid helps save lives by helping people access those services. So here are three things. More than 70% of Americans that they polled agreed with the following. Medicaid should be a priority for Congress to fund, with 60% of people saying it should be a high priority. Number two, Medicaid funding should not be cut to reduce government spending. And number three, more people have a favorable view of Medicaid than have a favorable view of private or employer-sponsored health insurance.
That is really interesting. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense because Medicaid is comprehensive coverage, mm-hmm. and there are no huge deductibles and, you know, some of the things, copays that people are encountering with their private insurance.
And Medicaid, like, the benefits are pretty standardized. So people, like, you can probably just Google in your state, what are the Medicaid benefits, and they're all going to be the same. And I think that's a big part of it, too. You got people that are like, I don't know what my health insurance covers. If it's not one of the essential health benefits that it has to, it's kind of like, well, let me see if I can figure this out. It's never easy. The survey also pointed out that 1 in 3 people with mental illness in the United States rely on Medicaid to access services. And of course, cuts to Medicaid would disproportionately harm these people who seek mental health care and substance use care. So those are my three things that I saw in the news that I thought people might be interested in. As we wrap up, let's all give everybody an assignment.
Okay, so my assignment is to make sure your federal congressman or woman and senators hear how you feel about the threat of Medicaid cuts in Kansas. So you could do this by attending a congressional delegation town hall meeting. If you can find one, that's a little bit difficult these days. We're not seeing a lot of those. I will say that the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas is having a series of meetings. I think when this comes out, we might still have one later today in Salina and one tomorrow in Shawnee. You can find details for that on our website, expandcancare.com. And we don't, at this point, have any Congress people who have confirmed that they're going to be attending, but we are certainly live streaming those events and sending the link to recorded versions to the delegation members so that one way or another, they or their staff can hear what constituents are saying about the Medicaid cuts here in Kansas. There are also other ways that you can get through to them. You can email them or call their number in Washington. You could write a letter to the editor to your local paper, and you could do something on social media that I think Lacey's going to talk about a little bit more. But however you do it, it doesn't matter, but make sure they know how you feel.
Marissa, do you have an assignment for the
audience? I do have an assignment. Kind of in line with what April said about the congressional delegation, the Kansas legislative session is over. So that means that our elected officials are back home. They're back in the community. So be looking for opportunities to meet with them about issues that are important to you. Look for those town halls. Maybe if you see them at the grocery store or something like that. Talk to them about those issues, maybe something that happened during the session this year or something that could be coming up during next legislative session.
Yeah, because this is a holdover year, right? Which means that legislation introduced this year, they can take up again next year. Yeah, so if something happened this year, it's not too late to talk to them or make your opinion known.
Absolutely.
Yeah. My assignment is for everybody to, if you have social media, I know that not everybody does, go to any of our social media pages or all of them, and share the pinned post that we have asking people to sign our petition asking the federal delegation to say no to Medicaid cuts. There's one on Facebook, there's one on Instagram, and we've got one on Blue Sky as well. Also, don't just share it, make sure you sign it. I should have said that first.
Very important.
Sign it first and then share it as we are collecting signatures to show just how many Kansans oppose these cuts to Medicaid. Very good. Anybody have anything else?
No, I don't think so.
They're looking at me like deer in the headlights. They're
play
like,
ball.
There's nothing else on the outline.
It's baseball
it's
season.
It's blank.
It is baseball season, isn't it?
Yeah.
Enjoy the weather. I feel revived that I can go outside without bundling up. Life is easier that way, so.
My maintenance man is fixing my air conditioning today.
So. Oh, Marissa's going to get air conditioning.
Super finally. Great. Thankfully, it hasn't been really hot, though. Like,
I would be such a baby. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Health in the 34th is a podcast from the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas. We hope you'll take a moment to subscribe and share our podcast with others. Episodes written and produced by Marissa Alcantar and Lacey Kennett. Episodes available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Join the movement and get involved. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. For more information on the Alliance for a Healthy Kansas, visit us at expandcancare.com.
For 12 years and then they reapply.
12 months.
Ooh. 12 months. Sorry.
Do you want to just say it again?
Yes. Yes, I do.
I think we should leave it like that.
Yes, I do. For 12
you
years.
You can do that in the bloopers.
For 12 years.
If anybody was starting to daydream while listening...